You're there in Job chapter 29. What I want you to observe as we round out this section of the book of Job is if you jump ahead to the very end of Job 31, you will notice these final words. The words of Job have ended. And there's been a lot of words Job has said in this book. You see him say a lot of things from chapter 3 all the way to chapter 31. And we were noting from chapter 28 now through 31 that this is Job's final reveal, his final declaration. We looked in Job 28 and saw that Job made the point that wisdom is found in being faithful to God, fearing the Lord. That is wisdom. And understanding is to turn away from sin. And Job now has some final remarks that he wants to make in regards to the nature of faithfulness when suffering. And I think as we begin this idea of faithfulness when suffering, it is important to acknowledge a truth that is being explored throughout this book. And that is, faithfulness is hard when suffering. And Satan said that from the very beginning. Remember, all the way back in chapter 1 and verse 11, Satan told God, "You stretch out your hand and touch all that he has, he will curse you to your face." In chapter 2, he'll make the same statement. "Skin for skin, all that a man has, he will give for his life. But stretch out your hand and touch his bone and his flesh, and he will curse you to your face." Satan makes this important charge. He says, if you will let me have the opportunity to make people's lives miserable enough, they won't be faithful. They'll quit. They'll give up on you. They'll stop serving. They'll stop worshiping. They'll stop praising. They'll curse you to your face. They're going to be done with you. Just give me the chance to just wreck their lives, and ultimately, they're going to quit. And that's one of the things that we are seeing in the life of Job is for all that he has experienced, for all that he has lost, for all of his suffering, and for all of his pain, you are seeing a faithfulness in Job. And that's what these final three chapters, as Job concludes his words, are ultimately all about. In Job 29, you will notice there that what Job is going to do is he is going to speak of the way things used to be, the way his life was. You see that there in verse 2 when he says, "Oh, that it were in the months of old." And I wanted to underline that for you for a moment because it's easy to read the book of Job and think that everything that happened happened last week. And he says, "Boy, I sure miss months ago." He's been at this a while. This has been a lot of suffering and a lot of pain now for many months that he is experiencing. And he's thinking back to the days of old. But the first thing that I want you to notice about what he says he is missing might be surprising to you. It may not be the first thing that we would perhaps think of. But notice in verse 2, he says, I wish as in the months of old, as in the days when God watched over me, when his lamp shone upon my head, and by his light I walked through the darkness, as I was in my prime, when the friendship of God was upon my tent, when the Almighty was yet with me. You will notice as he starts recounting the things that he's lost, he begins by stating, "I sure miss my relationship with God that I used to have." Now, a very important point to be made here. One of the things that Job is doing in this book that is a false assumption is that suffering means God has left you. And I've already talked about that in a lesson I titled "No Easy Answers." So if you want to go look back at that lesson many weeks ago was called "No Easy Answers," where sometimes it's put forward the idea is, if you're blessed, you must be with God, and if you're suffering, you must have done something wrong. That's what the friends say over and over again. And Job's rebuttal is not, well, that's not the way God operates. He's saying, well, I'm righteous, so that's not the reason. But he thinks that because he is suffering, that means God is far from him. And so that's what he's saying. I miss the days, verse 2, when God watched over me. When verse 3, that I walked through the darkness by his light. Verse 4, when the friendship of God was on my tent. Verse 5, when the Almighty was yet with me. He thinks that his difficulties, his suffering, his trials, his hardship must mean that God is far away. And I'm looking forward to, we'll be looking at, that's not true. That's not the case at all. But that's the way he feels at this moment. That's the way it appears to him. But one of the things that is particularly noteworthy about what he continues saying in chapter 29 is he starts talking about all the good that he was able to do before this calamity struck. And he describes how he was able to bless people, how he was able to use righteous deeds and righteous acts to be of service to other people and to help them. And you see some of that as you kind of scan your eyes through and talk about how he was a blessing, like in verses 13 and 14, how he was able to help people and deliver them who had cried out for help, and helping the widows and helping the blind and the lame. Verse 15, verse 16, a father to the needy. And he just starts talking about all the things that he was able to do as a servant of God before this destruction had ultimately come upon him. And I want you to notice something that I think is notable that he lays out here in verses 18 through 20. You will notice there where he's going to say something that he thought about the future. Notice in verse 18 he says, "Then I thought, I shall die in my nest, and I shall multiply my days as the sand, my roots spread out to the waters, with the dew all night on my branches, my glory fresh with me, and my bow ever new in my hand." I found that paragraph to be really important and really notable, because one of the aspects that I think is hard about suffering is there is the belief that things will always be the way that they are now. And that comes from either two directions. The direction Job is talking about, he says, when there were blessings and prosperity and things were good, I thought it was always going to be this way. I thought I was going to die in my nest and everything was going to be beautiful and blessing and good. My roots spread out to the waters and the dew of the night on my branches. Basically, the good times were always going to be this way, and now that's totally stopped. The other side of that coin that is also hard about suffering is when you're suffering and you're going through trials, it can feel like this is the way it is always going to be and it's never going to stop as well. And so one of the challenges of dealing with trials and hardships is whether you are in the prosperous time, we can be blindsided that tomorrow the trial just may smack you in the face and everything be turned upside down. And that's a lot of the pain and the hurt, is believing that tomorrow is going to be like today. And that's not the case. And the opposite is also true, that the suffering and the trials can be so hard and so difficult that we can believe tomorrow could never be better. It is always going to be darkness. It's always going to be gloom. It's always going to be pain. And so one of the things that Job is wrestling with, you see him grappling with this idea, is what he thought the future would be is not the way that it is. And so it's not just merely the physical pain that he's going through, but also just dealing with the I think so's of life, the way I thought things would go. I would suppose that if I were to ask the question, has anybody's life gone exactly according to the vision and the plan that you had when you were young? Nobody's going to say, oh yeah, exactly what I thought. I'm sure far from it. If you would have told me I would have lived in Florida the majority of life, a San Diego kid, no. Never left the state of California until I went to college. There's all kinds of things in life where you have a visual of this is the way things are going to go, and life never goes that way. And that's part of the internal wrestling that we have And Job is talking about that right now. Here's the way things used to be. And the first words of chapter 30 are very important. They're a continuation. This is not a break in his thought whatsoever. Just look at the first two words of chapter 30 where he just says, "But now." Chapter 29, "This is the way it was, and I was doing these things, and I was a blessing to people, and I thought it was going to be that way and stay that way and always go that way. I had this whole vision of how it was going to all go in my life." First one of chapter 30, "But now." But now things are radically different. But now things have dramatically changed. And I can't read all of chapter 30 due to the size of it, but let's just start with just a couple of the verses just to get a sense of it. Verse 1, "But now they laugh at me. Men who are younger than I, whose fathers I would have disdained to set even the dogs of my flock. What could be gained from the strength of their hands, men whose vigor is gone?" And he starts describing basically how Job used to be a respected person in the community who had wisdom that people listened to, how he was helping those who were oppressed and downtrodden, and he was someone who was useful among the people. And now even the most despicable people of society are laughing at him and mocking him and dismissive of him. He's just describing this radical reversal. And so part of his pain is not only the physical suffering and not only the I think so's of how I thought life was going to go, but it's also dealing with everybody else around him. That's a whole nother layer that he has, is that the poor man can't just sit there in pain and in silence and dealing with the sores that are on him and these terrible three friends who are egging him on and saying things that are false about him. It sounds like everybody else in the town is also piling on him as well. And they walk by and laugh at him and they deride him and they're making fun of him and they are dismissive of him, even though he is someone who was doing good for such people and was helping them and was kind to them and was using his blessings in a way that God approved. Remember chapter 1 and in chapter 2, twice over, being told that Job was a blameless man. He was upright, fearing God, turning from evil. And none of this is coming upon him as some kind of retribution. He's done right before God, and yet still what others are doing to him has been painful. But here's where the pain really underscores. After talking about what everybody else is doing, jump down to verse 18 of chapter 30 and listen to what he says next. Chapter 30, verse 18. "With great force, my garment is disfigured. It binds me like the collar of my tunic. God has cast me into the mire, and I have become like dust and ashes. I cry to you for help, and you do not answer me. I stand, and you only look at me. You have turned cruel to me. With the might of your hand, you persecute me. You lift me up on the wind and you make me ride on it. You toss me about in the roar of the storm. For I know that you will bring me to death and to the house appointed for all living." He says something pretty startling here. So you'll notice that he's not only saying, "I have all of this physical suffering," and not only is he saying, "I thought things were going to go this particular way, and they're not going that way," and not only does he say, "Others around me are ridiculing and mocking me and laughing at me," but then he gives this image and he says, "And I see that God has basically taken me by the collar and thrown me in the mud." That's the imagery he uses. He says, "When I cry out to God, God doesn't answer. He just stands there looking at me." In verse 21, he says that God has turned against him with cruelty. Verse 22 and 23, that God is intent on his death. I don't have the space here. Elihu is going to come along and say something about that. He's going to push back on Job's words right there. But I want us to more pay attention to the idea of where Job is at in his mind and how he is dealing with the suffering that he is experiencing. That it seems to him that everyone is against him. It seems like that there is no good anywhere that he looks. It seems like God is against him. His friends are against him. His community is against him. We know what his wife said about what she thinks he ought to do at the beginning of the book. He is simply just destitute in pain and anguish and in loss. And I want to put yourself in Job's shoes for a minute right here at chapter 30. And what would you do if you thought God had grabbed you by the collar and thrown you in the mud? And you thought that when you were calling out to God, God was just standing there looking at you but not answering. And what would you do if you looked at your situation and you thought, I'm just being treated cruelly. And he's just tossing me around in the roar of the storm only to drop me off the wind and put me into death. What would you do in regards to your relationship with God if that's the way you felt? Would you give up on God? Would you stop worshiping? Would you stop praying? Would you stop praising? Would you draw back from God? Would you change anything about how you approach God or your relationship with God if your suffering, it was so intense that you drew these conclusions? I want to remind us that Satan thinks that if he can make our lives hard enough, we'll quit. You need these two chapters to appreciate chapter 31. Because in chapter 31, what Job is not going to open up with in chapter 31 is, since it feels like God has grabbed me by the collar and thrown me into the mud, and when I cry out, he just stands there and looks at me, and he just is throwing me into the storm and is ultimately going to let me die. So chapter 31 opens and says, so I quit. I give up. I'm done. I've had it. This whole God thing is nuts around here, and I'm not going to do it anymore. After months of this pain and anguish, I quit. Notice that chapter 31 is a massive proclamation about how he had been faithful to God in the past and continues to be faithful to God now. Chapter 31 begins with words like this, verse 1. I have made a covenant with my eyes. How then could I gaze at a virgin? What would be my portion from God above and my heritage from the Almighty on high? Is not calamity for the unrighteous and disaster for workers of iniquity? Does not he see my ways and number all my steps? He begins by just saying, I've made a covenant with my eyes that I'm not going to lust. I'm not going to look and do something that is sin with my eyes. He's going through horrible pain and suffering. He says, I have made that commitment to God before, and I'm continuing that commitment now. Can I say something about that right here? That's a very noteworthy declaration that is worthy of our attention. That every one of us would make a covenant with our eyes about the things that we look at, the things that we gaze on, because so much around us is so impure. So much around us is so immoral. I continue to be just floored by what is mainstream media, mainstream television, mainstream things that Christians all too easily allow themselves to look at. And here is the statement by Job saying, I know that would be wrong, and I've made a covenant with my eyes that I'm not going to look on those kinds of things. I'm not going to be staring at things that are impure and wrong. I'm not going to participate in that. He goes further in verses 5 through 8, and you'll notice that he starts talking about how he is determined to live in all honesty before all people. There's no falsehood within him. Let him be weighed in the balance and see, I've been faithful to him, and I've not been false, and I've not been deceitful in any way. In verses 9 through 11, he continues and he says, I've been sexually pure through all that I've experienced before the trial and during the trial. My heart has not been pulled away because that that would be a horrible crime and iniquity that would be worthy of being judged. He goes on in verses 6 and 13 through 15 and says, I've treated people fairly. I haven't been partial in any way. I've been not only straightforward and honest, but I have not done anything in which someone would say you have been partial or false toward them. In verses 16 all the way down to verse 23, he recounts again all the good that he has done and never withheld whatever he had. If it was someone who was fatherless or the widow or the poor, he says, I did things to help them. In verse 24, he makes a powerful declaration where he says, I haven't made gold my confidence. I haven't put my trust in wealth. I put my trust in God. And if that had been the case, he said, I would be worthy of a judgment, but I haven't done that. He goes on to say, I haven't participated in false worship. In verses 26 through 28, he talks about how he's continued to be hospitable. And at the end of it all, he says, I haven't even hidden any sins from God. What I want you to see is this is clearly a life of integrity and faithfulness before God. And I want it to be framed in the idea that, and he's still faithful to God, even though he is at the most extreme point of suffering. And in trials, how easy is it for us to give into temptations to reject these faithful truths? Well, I'm going through things that are hard, so I'm going to allow sexual immorality. I'm going to go ahead and be impure. I'm going to be dishonest. I'm going to treat people unfairly. You don't understand what I'm going through. So it allows me to do these kinds of things. Job is impressive because before the trial and during the trial, he is hammering home the point of I have stayed faithful to God through everything that has happened to me. Now here is what I want us to think about. At the end of verse 31, or chapter 31. How terrible would it have been if chapter 31 had said, I've made a covenant with my eyes, and I've been upright and honest and faithful and true, and I haven't engaged in false worship, and I've continued to be hospitable, and I have not been impure, and I continue to be faithful to God, but you know what? Enough is enough, and I'm done. How sad would this book be if you looked at the life of Job, of years and years of faithfulness, and chapter 31 ended with, and Satan won and got him. He put the heat up hard enough on Job, and Job caved in and quit. And he gave in and sinned, and he gave in and walked away. He gave in and quit. He no longer served God the way that he had in the past. Imagine if chapter 31 said, Job changed how he lived and how he operated before God because of everything that had happened to him, and ultimately how much he had lost. It is amazing that you are the mass majority through the book of Job at chapter 31. And here is Job saying, I know that no matter how good my life is, I'm turning away from evil. And it doesn't matter how hard my life gets, I'm still turning away from evil. That's the faithfulness of Job. That's the endurance of Job. That's the steadfastness of Job that James is highlighting. This man stays faithful no matter what has happened to him. He continues to serve God and serve him in every way possible. Friends, would you please think about how terrible it would be for the life that you have lived before God and you have attempted to live with purity and honesty and integrity and faithfulness before him, and a trial comes along and Satan smacks you in the face and you give up at the very end and lose it all. I don't know that there's anything more dreadful to think about then a life that is on the right direction of faithfulness and serving to God, only to fail at the end. I mean, if you've studied some of the kings in the scriptures, doesn't it hurt to read about how some of them are so zealous and so faithful and so on fire for God, and then something happens and they fail? Something happens and they quit. You might remember, like, King Asa. He loses his health and he doesn't turn to God. Or you read about Solomon with all of his wisdom, but at the end he turns away from God. You read about all of these people in scriptures who start strong and fail at the end. There is a notable person in the Bible that I want to draw your attention to. I'll turn there in just a moment, but his name only appears three times in the scriptures. We know nothing about him. Colossians chapter 4 and verse 14, he's just kind of tacked on at the end as a name, as a part of all of these people of greetings. You know, greeting the church in Colossae. And his name is tacked on again at the end of the letter that is written to Philemon in verse 24. Now here he is, and he is a part of Paul's companions and the work that they're doing. And they all say, "Hi, Philemon, and everybody in your house." We all say hi to you. Keep up the faith and keep strong. Church of Colossae, keep up the faith and keep strong. And then you read this unbelievable statement at the end of Paul's life, where he says to Timothy, "Do your best to come to me soon. For Demas, in love with this present world, has deserted me and gone to Thessalonica." That's all you get. His name is in Colossians 4:14. His name is in Philemon 24. As one of Paul's companions, Christian doing the work and saying hi. And then one of Paul's final letters is to say, "I need you to come because Demas has deserted me." And we're not told exactly what happened. We want more information, right? Paul, tell us what took place. Was he tired of the hardships? Was he tired of all the difficulties that it took to follow you? Was he just tired of not having money and was trusting in wealth and he wanted to go back and have some more money? Or maybe he wanted some life stability. Maybe he just wanted some comfort. What is it that happened? But Paul boils it down to what was underneath all of it. He was in love with this present world. He cared more about this world than the world to come. And so he quit. He gave up and went away. Friends, I want us to just simply focus on this truth for the lesson. When suffering comes, and it's going to come, and it's going to come hard, and it's going to hurt, and it's going to tear your insides out, focus on faithfulness to God. When life gets hard, focus on faithfulness to God. And I want you to hear what Satan was saying through all of this, that he's trying to make it as hard as he can so that you will love this present world and walk away. The words that God told to Cain, "Sin is crouching at the door." Isn't that quite an image? Just ready to strike. Sin is crouching at the door. My dad tells a story. I don't remember it because I would have been like 4 or 3 or 2, or I don't know. He'd have to tell you how old I was. We lived in the boonies of Lake Elsinore. It's hard to believe that that's no longer the case. It used to be the middle of nowhere in California, and it's not. He said, one of those, we're living out in the middle of nowhere, there's rattlesnakes everywhere. He said, that opened the door and there was a rattlesnake right there at the front door. And that's quite a visual to think about. That Satan is right there at the door, just looking for the chance. If he can just make it tough enough on you, he's ready to strike. That he's crouching at the door. Sin is right there. And friends, trials and suffering so often push us into sin. We so often just will let our guard down and go, it's too hard. I can't do it anymore. Which is exactly what the tempter wants you to do. Exactly his whole purpose. We are giving in to the very purpose that Satan has behind our suffering. Please, please listen to what Job is saying. I've been faithful, and through it all, I've stayed faithful. There is no unrighteousness in me, no matter what has happened to me. I still have a covenant with my eyes. I have remained pure. I've remained honest. I've remained faithful. And friends, if Job can do that, we can do that. We can stay faithful to God in the midst of the deepest suffering and the hardest circumstances. Because at the end of the day, our faithfulness is being tested. Will you focus on faithfulness? Or else we'll be tempted to have these terrible words that Paul said regarding Demas. In love with the present world, he now has deserted me. And God to Thessalonica. Friends, the temporary pleasures of this life are not worth comparing to what we're going to enjoy. And don't let your story be Demas' story. Don't let it be that you walked 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, 50 years, 60 years, 70 years faithfully to God, but at the very end, the book closes with, but then they loved the present world and gave up their faithfulness. Don't let that be you. You need faithfulness all the more when life gets hard. And God is here to support us. And Job shows us the way to be faithful through any circumstance. Let's go to God in prayer this morning. Our Heavenly Father, what an example Job puts before us. An example of faithfulness through any circumstance. And Lord, I pray that you would give us the same endurance and faithfulness and steadfastness to be able to hold on through any storm, to be able to be strong in you through any difficulty. Lord, forgive us for when we have been in love with the world and when we've allowed our suffering to be an excuse for us to move away from what you've asked us to do. And Lord, we have so many here who are wrestling with the trials and suffering of life. I pray for strength for each and every one of us. Help us to seek you with all of our heart. And Lord, we pray that our faithfulness would not only stay strong, but that we would be able to endure to the end so that we could be found as faithful servants of yours. So help us in this effort and forgive us for our failure. In Jesus' name, amen.